You're listening to the UAE's number one talk radio station.
This is The Agenda
on Dubai Eye 103.8.
Hello there, and thank you for downloading The Agenda's podcast from today, the 2nd of June. And I started today's show with a question because I wanted to know how many people listening were smokers. Recent figures show that smoking rates in the UAE are actually pretty low for the Middle East, with 438 cigarettes smoked in the UAE per person per year. But with one in seven deaths worldwide due to smoking, campaigners say that's still too much. So what can be done? We caught up with Andrea Jabari-Leinberger, who is Assistant Director of Tobacco Research at NYU Abu Dhabi. Meanwhile, Emirati astronaut Sultan Al Niyadi is halfway through his six-month stint aboard the International Space Station. We checked in with his boss, Salam Al Mari, to find out how things are going. Plus, the UAE has taken the presidency of the UN Security Council for the month of June. Ambassador Lana Nusseibeh outlined their priorities, and producer Jennifer Crichton had the details. Plus, Andrew Hosey brought us up to date with all the sports news. Do you smoke? Are you a fan? Do you smoke cigarettes, or have you made the move to vaping? For a long time, it sort of fell out of fashion. I think everyone I knew gave up, maybe because we all had young children. But as they're getting older, I've noticed it creeping back in again. People are going old school. Not so many vaping, but people are going back to cigarettes, which is a really interesting and unexpected trend. I managed to give up about 5 years ago now. And I don't smoke anymore because I remember it from a bad time. And so therefore, I don't feel inclined to have another one. But it is incredibly addictive. And I remember trying to give up again and again and finding it very difficult. And this week, the world has marked World No Tobacco Day. And experts say that still much more does need to be done in the Middle East to discourage people from smoking. Although we actually don't have that bad figures here. According to the most recent edition of the Tobacco Atlas, which was actually released last year, the equivalent of 438 cigarettes are smoked in the UAE per person each year. And that is one of the lowest. If you look at Libya, it's 1,764. Kuwait, 1,840. And the highest of all is in Lebanon. They smoke 1,955 cigarettes per person each year. The lowest figure is recorded in Yemen, and that's where the number is 214. But I think that's probably socioeconomic there. You know, there's shortages of food, so I imagine people aren't really spending their money on cigarettes. The dangers of smoking are, you know, without getting too preachy, pretty unarguable. One in seven deaths worldwide are due to smoking. So what is the government here? And what are the governments in the Middle East doing about it? In Canada, they're actually trying something new. Soon, every cigarette's going to carry a health warning, not just on the packet. We've all got used to the warnings on the packet. But actually, the actual cigarette, you know, that the butt of the cigarette are going to be printed with phrases like cigarettes cause cancer and poison in every puff. But I mean, several campaigns have shown the efficacy of these sort of statements and the sort of nasty packaging. But to be honest, I'm not sure if you're addicted to smoking, whether it's going to make much of a difference. So what can be done? I'm joined now by Andrea Jabari-Leinberger, who is Assistant Director of Tobacco Research right here in the UAE at NYU Abu Dhabi. Fantastic to have you join us on the line, Andrea. How are you?
I'm well, thank you. Thank you very much for having me.
It's good to have you on the line. Has the government sort of seized the mettle on this question, on this matter? Are they trying to discourage people from smoking?
Oh, definitely. I think here in the UAE, there have been a lot of efforts to curb tobacco smoking. And so I think there's been a lot of sweeping policy efforts, as well as efforts to encourage people to seek out smoking cessation services. So we have done a lot. But I think there always is more that can be done.
So what is the major sort of tobacco usage? What mode do people inhale their tobacco? Is it mainly through cigarettes or vaping or shisha?
So we have some evidence currently at New York University Abu Dhabi with our collaborators. We have the UAE Healthy Future Study. And through that study, we've examined tobacco use patterns amongst Emirati adults. And we are seeing that while cigarette use is relatively high, we do find that people use other forms of tobacco like shisha and midwaq as well, and sometimes even combinations of those.
Am I right in thinking that they're actually worse for you? Because even though the shisha smells lovely and bubbly and, you know, you can get them smelling of peach and things like that, so you almost can tell yourself it's sort of healthy and fragrant. Actually, there's no rumor has it that there's no filter and therefore they're actually worse for you than cigarettes.
Yeah, so there's some interesting research out there on water pipe shisha tobacco smoking. The health effects of shisha are actually quite stark, and it's partially because there's no filter on the tobacco, but you also smoke it for longer periods of time. And so one shisha session, which could last about 45 minutes, you have increasing levels of exposure to carbon monoxide and other toxicants in the tobacco smoke. So you're exposed for longer periods of time.
Are we also seeing an increase in the use of vapes among younger children? Because there's been loads in the press about that.
Sure. We don't really have a lot of evidence right now. We need more surveillance evidence on patterns of use of things like vape amongst young people. Currently, some of the evidence that we have amongst adults is that vaping is really more common amongst people who already smoke. Possibly because they're trying to replace their combustible tobacco with vape. We do need more research, and we do need to have more surveillance on vaping and other heated tobacco products, for example, as well.
Is it sort of generally accepted within the research community, the tobacco research community that you're part of, that vaping is a better option to cigarette smoking, or has the tide turned slightly against them?
So I guess we would say we know that vaping, the exposure to toxicants is not as great with vaping. But we still need longer term studies to understand what really are the long term effects of vaping. But I guess I would say in comparison to combustible tobacco, the risks are fewer, but it is not risk free.
So we've seen various sort of measures introduced around the world. I mean, I remember in the United Kingdom when they started putting sort of labels on the packets of sort of, people having heart surgery and lung cancer and things like that, you know, actual pictures of what the cigarettes were doing to your organs. And I remember I smoked at the time, and I remember, you know, just turning the packet over, frankly, you know, you just wouldn't look. It didn't really have much of an impact on whether or not I was smoking, although it did make it feel less glamorous. I have to say, you know, there's nothing attractive about a cigarette packet with somebody's sort of dark lungs on it. But we have just heard about this measure that they're introducing in Canada. From your perspective, and the research, I suppose, must show that these efforts do have some sort of impact.
It's interesting, yeah. So the research out there, there's quite a bit of research out there on the use of pictorial graphic health warnings on tobacco products, mainly on cigarette products. And the evidence is very clear that if a warning label is visible and is seen and also contains informative messaging, that it is effective in helping people to change their tobacco use behaviors and quit. And so we know this from the evidence that these types of warning labels do work. And so it is going to be interesting to see what happens in Canada with the individual labeling of the cigarettes. So it's I think part of the reasoning for that may be that they're trying to target individuals who maybe don't see the labels because they're either taking a cigarette from a friend, not buying their own cigarettes. So it'll be interesting to see what happens.
Yeah, I mean, because literally the phrases, you know, cigarettes cause cancer and poison in every puff are going to be on literally every single cigarette. Is that something that you'd like to see done here? Would you, you know, in an ideal world, if you could recommend anything to the government, what measures would you like to see introduced here to reduce the amount of tobacco use?
Sure. So, I mean, I definitely think, I mean, we do have warning labels on packaging right now. But again, if it's packaging for products that are not commonly used, so for example, we don't necessarily see the warning labels on shisha. So people, if people are shisha users, they're not going to see a warning label. So I think if we could potentially even extend the warning labels to products like shisha or the midwalk pipe, putting the labeling on the device could potentially be a measure that could help.
Andrea, amazing to have you join us on the line. Thank you very much indeed for your time. That's Andrea Jabari-Leinberger, who is Assistant Director of Tobacco Research at NYU Abu Dhabi. It's now been 3 months since Emirati astronaut Sultan Al Niyadi travelled up to the International Space Station, which means he is halfway through his stay and he has been keeping busy. It's fair to say that he's had plenty of activities. He was the first Arab and the first person, of course, from the UAE to do a spacewalk on the 28th of April, making history with this moment.
Again, the eighth spacewalk for Bowen and a new history-making day for Sultan Al Niyadi. He's the first astronaut from the United Arab Emirates to conduct a spacewalk.
This is what he had to say once he was outside that door.
It's a great moment for the UAE. I would like to thank my leadership, the leadership of the UAE and the USA, specifically MBRC and NASA, for believing in us and for giving us this opportunity. This might be the first in the Arab world, by definitely won't be the last. We have astronauts under training now to undergo future missions to the ISS, to the lunar service, and to Mars. So I would like to thank everybody who helped preparing us for this moment.
Sultan Al Niyadi has also greeted two other Arabs to the International Space Station in the last week. They were two Saudis, including the first ever Arab woman to travel to space. So he's been keeping busy, but what is next for him? Let's catch up with his boss, engineer Salam Al-Mari, who is Director General of the Mohammed bin Rashid Space Center. Thank you so much for joining us on Teams, Salam. How are you? I hope you're well.
I'm doing great, Georgia. Thank you very much. And I hope you're doing well as well.
Yes, I am. How about Sultan? How's he doing up there in space?
He's doing great. I mean, the nice thing about him, you know, there is the you know, people can follow him on Twitter, on Instagram. They can do the live sessions with him so they can see for themselves how happy he is and how well he's doing. And, you know, it's been a really busy 90 days. And I think we've got an even busier 90 days going forward as well.
Well, that leads me very naturally into my next question of what is he getting up to next?
Okay, sure. I'll talk about that. But I think, George, it would be nice for us to kind of give a very brief summary of kind of the highlights. You did a good job of that as well. But, you know, what he did on those 90 days previous. And, you know, there's a lot of things that people don't talk about, but that are very important. So, you know, he's done at least 30 to 35 different science experiments for the UAE and for the ISS partnership, which is, you know, something very big. So science is pretty much half of his day there. You spoke about the EVA itself, the spacewalk, which was, you know, weeks and weeks of preparation before. And then, of course, a recovery period. So just looking at a 7-hour spacewalk is about 3 weeks of work that he had to put in. And then, you know, his connections with people here on the ground. So he's had 5 PAO events, all of live with, you know, up to 10,000 people here in the UAE, where, you know, he's connecting with leadership, he's connecting with media, he's connecting with students. We did one from Dubai Opera, we did one from UAE University. We're going to every emirate in the Emirates, every city, and we expect to reach at least 25 to 30,000 people live. He does regularly these radio calls with people here at MBRC. We had 2 yesterday and 2 the day before, where, you know, really excited kids can go in and have a discussion directly one-on-one with him through a radio call. And, you know, that's really exciting for the kids, as well as, you know, all of the other things that you mentioned, you know, the Saudis coming, the cargo missions coming, all of that in 90 days. That's quite a lot to do with for him to do. So looking forward, of course, the next 90 days, I think there's more of the same. But of course, the science is going to be a big part of what's happening in the next 90 days.
Yeah.
So with these cargo. Yeah, go ahead, Georgia.
Well, I was going to say that the immediacy of those conversations that you have, I was very lucky to attend one of them. And it is extraordinary to see him there on screen talking to you from all the way up in space. And certainly I can imagine how inspiring that is for the children. But I interrupt you. I'm really keen to know what he's going to be doing over the next 3 months.
Yes, thank you, Georgia. And of course, the next 3 months, I think, you know, as I mentioned, he's done quite a lot of science, but he's got over 200 science experiments that he's going to be participating in or conducting on behalf of scientists on the ground throughout his mission. So he's not, you know, he's done about 20%, 25% of that. So he's got a lot of science left, especially UAE science. So the next period is going to be really science heavy, science focused. There's also potentially a historic moment with the Boeing spacecraft coming up for the first time in history with two astronauts on board. That'll be a test flight. So those test flights are very unique because they only happen once, and it's the first time astronauts fly on such on that vehicle. So they'll be the ones that will be in the ISS receiving that vehicle, and then of course conducting all the work from with those two test pilots coming up. So that is scheduled to happen in July. Of course, we have another 10 PAO events, so public live events that will be broadcast on TV in all Emirates of the country. Some of them, of course, happen outside of the country as well. So I forgot to mention we had one in Mauritius. We are looking at planning some outside of the country as well. So all of that is happening in the next 3 months. And then, of course, they have another cargo mission that's coming. That cargo mission is going to be bringing all of that science that they'll be conducting. He'll also be supporting from inside the station two EVAs that will be conducted by two American astronauts. So he'll have tasks inside the station of suiting them up, following, maybe controlling the robotic arm. So there's a lot of work they've got to do in preparing for those EVAs and making sure that they are conducted safely. So a lot of work the next 3 months. I'm really excited.
I have to say, one of the things that he said in the press conference that I attended was that he is very busy. You know, that the time passes very quickly because he is kept so busy. So you do get that sense that every second counts in space when they're aboard that laboratory.
Yeah, every second counts, every second costs, and every second is a responsibility. So, you know, when you see these, you know, the pictures that he releases that he's taken of Earth or of the station, or these short videos that he's communicating, doing a tour, you know, that's mainly done in a very tight scheduled moment or in his free time, you know, when he's supposed to be resting or relaxing. So that shows you how busy he is. And it's very important for us to really connect with people in the Arab world. So what we've seen, Georgia, is that when we release a tweet from Sultan al-Niyadi, that tweet can get anywhere between, 500,000 views to 5 million views. So that is a huge reach for somebody from this region to on one platform. And that's a huge responsibility. So he takes that seriously. We take that seriously. And I think just educating the public about space, what astronauts do in their lives, how important it is for us to be part of space exploration as this region and as this country. I mean, this is something that, you know, I'm really happy to be part of, and he's very happy to be part of. So it's a big responsibility, a lot of work, but we're loving it.
Yeah, it is absolutely amazing to see all those videos come through. I love any of the ones where he does sort of globules of water and things. It's just fascinating. As ever, Salam Al-Mari, thank you so much for your time. Fantastic to have you join us on the line to talk, well, to mark that 3 month anniversary for Sultan Al-Niyadi. He's halfway through his stay aboard the International Space Station. I think the sort of 3 month mark is actually tomorrow, but we're not on air tomorrow, so we did it today. So thank you very much indeed, Salam. Lovely, as always, to have you right here on the agenda on Dubai. My Eye 103.8. Now, the United Arab Emirates has taken the presidency of the UN Security Council for the month of June, with stated plans to build bridges in a polarized world. Now, this is a revolving chairmanship that takes place each month, and it changes. Now, the UAE has been on the UN Security Council now for a few months, and they actually assumed the presidency back at the very beginning of their participation on the Security Council. Now, in some ways, it's quite difficult if you're not involved in international politics, and why would you be? It might be quite difficult to know exactly how the United Nations Security Council works. It has 5 permanent members and 10 non-permanent, and they rotate month to month. And the UAE was elected to that 2-year spot on the Security Council back in June 2021. It last held the presidency in March 2022, and it really does give the country an opportunity to make its mark on the global stage. Back in March, the Council issued 4 resolutions, including one on a renewed peacekeeping missions in Afghanistan and also one in South Sudan. Now, this presidency, the UAE is planning to host several events focused on promoting peace in the Middle East and also combating climate change. Now, producer Jennifer Crichton's been taking a look at this topic, looking into the details, including Lana Nusseibeh, who is the UAE's ambassador to the UN, who's actually held her first press conference for this presidency. Is that right?
That's right. And it was incredibly strong stuff. She's been outlining everything that's going to be going on at the Security Council in June. And it is a very busy month. It's a notably busy month, actually, for the Security Council every year, June. And they, in addition to all of the planned sort of architectural things that go on at Security Council each month, the UAE will also be hosting 3 specific events that are focused on areas of their choosing. Now, Lana Nusseibeh, who is the UAE's ambassador to the UN, addressed the press for the first time as chair of the council yesterday, and this was her introduction.
The UAE is assuming its presidency for the second time during our term. As the first time, it is still a time of deep division and polarization. So the UAE will continue to aim to play a constructive role to build bridges and find space for agreement and consensus on the numerous important and critical files on the Security Council's agenda. So that is the philosophy of our approach this month.
And so on that basis, she said the Council's work in June would focus on a large number of countries which are currently in the grip of uncertainty, insecurity and conflict.
If you look at the programme of work, you can see it's going to be a very busy month, as the month of June often is, and we hope that it will also be fruitful and results-oriented. We will meet on a number of country-specific files on the Council's agenda for this month, so Afghanistan, Central Africa, the Central African Republic, the Democratic Republic of the Congo, the Gulf of Guinea, Iraq, Libya, Mali, the occupied Palestinian territory, Somalia, Sudan, South Sudan, Syria, and Yemen.
And the UAE is going to host 3 key events during its month as chair. What are the issues that they're going to be consulting on?
That's right. So one of those is on issues specifically related to the Arab world. Another will look at the links between climate change and security. And the third, very interestingly, is about countering intolerance. Now, on that third note, she said that the UN Security Council had previously failed to grasp the importance of racism and intolerance as a contributor to global conflict.
Across the globe, we're seeing an increasingly worrying rise in intolerance, hate speech, racism and extremism, all of which undoubtedly fuel violence and divide communities. And these are threats to international peace and security, and they're not limited to a single country or region. The Council has not always consistently addressed hate speech, racism and other forms of extremism as threat multipliers that drive the outbreak, escalation and recurrence of conflict. So we think this is an opportunity to elevate that issue. It's already being discussed across the UN system in numerous forums. And it's a key priority for us during our term to push for that more consistent and effective approach.
And on that note, Nusseibeh said that the UAE wanted to look specifically at solutions that treat intolerance with the gravitas it warrants.
We think the world urgently needs political leaders to renew their commitment to peace, tolerance and human fraternity. And their action should be reinforced by a whole-of-society approach centred on these shared values. We see extremism and the extremist narratives that can take root easily through misinformation and disinformation as a nefarious scourge of our time, and it's spreading rapidly via the internet and social media. So we think that education, interfaith dialogue, community dialogue really has to step up and play a key role in countering it.
So that was the one that we were most surprised, I think, to see on the programme, and some really strong stuff there from Lana Nusseibeh. Now, of course, we would have expected to see climate change being a key focus for the UAE, given that we are going to be hosting COP28 this year. However, I think perhaps there has been some questions in the past about the role that something like the UN Security Council, which has traditionally focused more on areas of conflict and security specifically, would have to do in the climate change debate. And Nusseibeh said that they hope that the UAE can use its time as chair of the council to really formalise a role for the UN Security Council in that battle against climate change. She said it was a critical issue to national, regional and global security.
The impacts of climate change on international peace and security require a carefully calibrated role for the Security Council. And our ambition is that this event will help to continue to build a common view on what this role could be in the future. And of course, there are many views on the Council as to this topic, but we really feel there is wide support from the membership to continue highlighting its critical importance to peace and security.
And she said that issue was in particularly sharp focus for the UAE right now, given that upcoming hosting of COP28.
We're really honoured to be hosting COP28, not only because it's an existential issue for all countries, including the countries of the Middle East, but because we hope to be able to contribute with our long-standing experience in the field of climate change and renewable energy to the deliberations. So we approach that role with humility, a great sense of responsibility, but also the urgency that this topic requires.
Lana Nusseibeh there, the UAE's ambassador to the United Nations, as the country takes up the presidency of the UN Security Council for the month of June. It'll be really interesting to see what they achieve there over the next 28 or so days. And we will be following that story very closely right here on The Agenda as it develops. Welcome back to the programme. Georgia here, joined in the studio by, well, I was going to say producer Andrew Hosey, but he's not the producer today. He's the sports news person today, and he is feeling happy.
I am. It's the end of the week.
It's not just that, though, is it?
I'm off on holiday. Yeah, tomorrow morning I'm flying out.
Yes. And where are you going, sir?
I'm heading to Antalya in Turkey.
Well, their economy's just tanked a little bit further, so your dirham will go even further.
It has indeed. We were just, I was converting the cost of a drink.
Yes, lemonade.
Yes, and a coffee, much cheaper.
Much cheaper than it used to be. I have to say, well-timed, sir, well-timed indeed. My husband often looks at sort of countries where their currencies have crashed and says bizarre things like, shall we go to Argentina next week? I'm like, no.
Yeah, what about the 100% inflation? Mind you, Turkey's similar, so.
Oh, I see. Yes. There, it does balance it out somewhat.
A little bit, but still Turkey's very good value for money.
And how long are you going for?
Going there for a week and then off to Montenegro afterwards.
My goodness me, we're going to forget what you look like.
I'm really looking forward to that. I've just been speaking to producer Jen about Montenegro, actually.
And, does she know it well?
She does know it well and knows the place that I'm going to very well and says that I'm going to have an amazing time there. So looking forward very much to that.
No jealousy from me here. I'm going to stay calm and collected.
But I'm getting my holidays out the way early-ish.
Because I'm disappearing for the summer. Yep, that's fair enough. That is fair enough. I should have a little more foresight on that and just be enthusiastic for your holiday vacationing. Okay, let's talk about sport before I get too jealous and forget my place. Let's start with tennis because, of course, we've got the French Open going on.
We have indeed. And Mira Andreeva has set up a third round clash with last year's runner-up Coco Gauff. The Russian, who's only turned 16 at the end of April, beat Diane Parry in straight sets. Wimbledon champion Elena Rybakina is safely through, though, easing past Linda Noskova. Looking at today's action, world-born Carlos Alcaraz is taking on Denis Shapovalov and 22-time Grand Slam champion Novak Djokovic. He plays the 29th seed Alejandro Davidovich. Rich Fokina. And the man who is never far from controversy, as we know, he is standing by his political message about Kosovo that he made at the Open. Djokovic signed a camera lens saying Kosovo is the heart of Serbia, stop the violence, something he has been criticised for doing. But he says he's using the controversy to motivate him.
It's something that that I stand for, so that's all, you know, drama-free Grand Slam. I don't think it can happen for me, you know. I guess that drives me as well.
We've got more Grand Prix action this weekend. Something to look forward to?
Yep, the first and second practice sessions get underway at 3:30 this afternoon and 7 this evening, respectively, for our time for the Barcelona Grand Prix. And defending Formula One world champion Max Verstappen will look to continue his early season dominance. He and Red Bull teammate Sergio Perez have won all 6 races on the calendar so far this year, heading into the meeting in Spain. Mercedes pair Lewis Hamilton and George Russell will hope to build on their results last week in Monaco, where they placed 4th and 5th respectively.
Okay, we've had reports of a very unsavoury incident in football, haven't we?
Yes, I was taking a look at this on Twitter a little bit earlier. Not very pleasant at all. A group of Roma fans have been filmed throwing a chair and bottle towards referee Anthony Taylor following the Europa League final defeat. The English official was called a disgrace by boss Jose Mourinho after the match. He was with his family at Budapest Airport yesterday. The harassment has been condemned by the PGMOL. They oversee refereeing in the English professional football after videos circulated on social media. Sevilla won the trophy on penalties, of course, with Taylor having dished out a record 14 yellow cards during the game.
OK, let's take a look ahead at the England versus Ireland test on yesterday's, well, we looked at it in the sports roundup yesterday. But how did that first day play out?
Well, England cricketer Josh Tung said that it was a very special day for him as he made his test debut at Lord's. The hosts trail Ireland by 20 runs, funnily enough, resuming on 152 for 1 after bowling the tourists out in their first innings. Tung explains how he was feeling ahead of his first ever delivery.
Bit of nerves, I'm not going to lie. But as soon as I got that first over, I think bowling a maiden was quite nice. But as soon as I bowled that first ball, I just got into my work.
Fantastic news indeed. Thank you very much indeed, Andrew Hosey. I wish you the very best of holidays. You will be missed here on the agenda.
Thank you very much. I'll miss it.
Goodness knows how we're going to pull it all together, considering how many different roles you've performed on the programme in the last 2 weeks.
I'm sure you'll struggle through.
Sport, news, reporting, producing, a bit of presenting. I don't know what we're going to do. Have a great break, though.
Thank you very much.
The Agenda is live Monday to Friday from 10 a.m. till 1 p.m.